You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And today we have two guests with us here today. One of them, Kunat, an artist that the Arts Council has funded through a scholarship, and also Katie Oliver from the Arts Council. And here she is giving a rundown of what the Arts Council does around town.
We're a nonprofit organization. We've been in operation since 1963. And we have a staff of three, and we have about five major program areas. And those that are most active right now are Some Arts for Kids program, which creates affordable and quality arts instruction opportunities over the summer. And we just started our first class this week with block printing. And we're also on the cusp of launching our 2016-2017 Performing Arts Series, which I'm happy to talk to you about today.
And Some Arts is a really cool program. How many years have you been doing it?
Some Arts has been around for decades. When I was a young person growing up in Kodiak, I was in the theater program in Some Arts, so I know that it's been around since at least the mid-80s.
In looking at some of those classes, some of them are like my dream, like younger me's dream.
Yes.
There's music, and there's art, and there are classes that use natural resources. And I don't have anything in front of me right now, but there is one where someone makes tools, like paintbrushes.
Yeah, that is a new class this year that's led by Jackie Madsen, and it's called Wild Tool Making. And she's going to take the kids out to collect some natural materials and teach them how to make artist tools out of materials that they find here on the island. And we hear from parents all the time that they want to take the classes with their kids, and they wish that they offered classes for adults. And we've expanded some of these arts opportunities into adults classes over the winter. But every year, local teaching artists come up with great new ideas, and it's exciting to see them come to fruition in classes.
Yeah, can you talk about some of the other highlights?
Sure. Also new this year, we have ukulele classes. After Jake Shimabukuru, we knew that that was going to be a popular concert. We had Jake Shimabukuru here in Kodiak in January. But we had no idea the extent to which there are budding ukulele players here on the island. And after his concert, there was a line all throughout the auditorium foyer with people with their ukuleles to have him sign and to meet him. So we offered a ukulele class for kids during spring break with Keola Marfil. And they were very popular, and he agreed to offer them again this summer. So we have one class for younger kids, I believe that's aged 8 to 11, and then there's a second class for 12 and up. And those are both starting on June 7th, and he'll have a July class as well if folks are traveling in June.
And just off the top of my head, there's another class that involves dyeing cloth, I believe?
Yep, we have fabric dyeing in July with Eva Katowski. We have a number of sort of fabric arts classes this year as well. Eva is doing fabric dyeing, and Kate Anthony is doing intro to machine sewing and quilt making for kids, and those are all in July, too.
I love these. These are so Kodiak. Like, growing up in Brooklyn, a lot of the classes at the local art institutes were like painting 101 and drawing, which is great,
mm-hmm.
which is terrific. But these are so unique and so creative. Like, I would never have thought to go to a cloth dyeing class or make my own paintbrushes. And it's so cool that kids get to enroll in these classes. Is it dependent on age? Can anyone...
Yep, you can start as early as three. There's Marine Mosaic with Kathy Johnson that will accept students as young as three. Most of them have an age minimum of kindergarten and up. And there's a number of classes that are for middle school and high school age students as well. With the program, we have the intent to really let the teaching artists devise the classes. Some classes are pretty standard, but we want to support the ideas that come from the artists. That's how we find the most success with some of our programs, is sort of co-creating between the organization and the artists. So there are always fantastic new ideas.
Where do you find all these teachers?
Well, we have another program in partnership with the school district where we offer teaching artist training. And Kunat, I believe that you went through that this spring.
I did.
Yeah. So it's the intent of that is to help local artists become confident in working in classrooms and working with students. But when folks go through that training, sometimes they might want to do a lesson in a little bit more informal setting. So some arts offers the opportunity to sort of set your limit. You know, you can say, I can work up to 10 kids. You can set your hours. And it's a good place to pilot lessons that you might want to take to a classroom later during the school year.
And Kunat, you said you took a class earlier in the year?
Yeah, the Arts Council hosted a Saturday full-day session for artists to come in who have never been an artist in residence before or an arts teacher to get experience, get a little bit of background. They gave some really good hints and tips. They had some principals come in and explain when you're getting in front of a classroom and there's 35 kids and what the teachers are going to be there for. And it was just a really informative background before you kind of jump into it and say, I'm going to go into a classroom.
What was your takeaway from that?
I think that you can kind of do anything because they gave us a outline of what the school district, each grade level, what they study, whether it's, you know, seventh, I don't know the exact ones, but it was like, oh, when they're in fifth grade, they study local politics and local interest. And then when they go to sixth grade, you move on to state. And when you go to seventh grade, you move on to national. So you could kind of say, okay, I'm going to do something local. I want to work with fifth graders. And you kind of didn't realize, or at least I didn't, that that's how the school system is set up. So they build on their knowledge from previous years. But as an artist, if there's something you want to do, you can focus in and know, hey, I can design this program for this group of students.
And so you're a speech pathologist with the district?
I'm a speech pathologist assistant.
Okay.
I'm an aide five is what it's called in special education.
Okay, but you're also an artist.
I am.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your art?
Sure. I'm a landscape painter. I've been painting about 15 years. And after doing a lot of the normal art stuff where you go through all these different styles and you practice doing still lives and people and things, and then the abstract and throwing paints around, I really love the earth. I really love nature. I really love the majesty and just awe-inspiring of what is around us that man had no hand in. And no hand in creating. And landscapes are just what I kept coming back to. When I went back and looked over my art the last 5 years or so, I kind of realized, oh, I'm a landscape painter. I'm doing a barometer study right now, which if you look at it, it's kind of just a triangle. It's just barometer from the crest where the hiking trail is. And I've been painting it over and over and over again the last about 9 months now. Kind of when you think of Monet and his water lilies, I think he did several hundred versions of that same pond. It's, you get to watch it go through the seasons. You get to watch it change. You get to go in different weather. And that's just that's the fun part of landscape, is that even if it's the exact same image of the same mountain, it's constantly changing.
What fascinates you about barometer?
I don't know. Just because it's there in such a way that everyone knows it, it's recognizable, and it's actually the view out of my bedroom.
Hmm.
And so it's one of those things that no matter what, every single day I'm looking at barometer. So when I would go to work, you know, I pass the lookout because I live out of town. And so I love Dead Man and that lookout, but barometer, it's just always there to me. So I can see when it's covered at the top or when it's snowing, or I can watch hikers go up and down. I know it sounds a little creepy, but, you know, you have your binoculars and I can watch people go up and down it. And just it's such a solid point in my life on the island, I think.
And what do you see from the hikers? Do they look like they're having a good time?
From the distance, it does. Like, they look like they're having a blast going up barometer. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't go out and try to talk to them afterwards. But when they wear just so all the hikers know, when you wear, like, the really bright orange windbreakers or vest or something, they're so easily spot against the bright green background of the mountain. So every now and then you'll see goats on there, down past Sheridan if you're looking off to the side. But it's just fun to watch the mountain, and it's such a rock. It's the keystone of the island, I think, almost, or at least the town community.
Can you talk a little bit about the scholarship you received from the Arts Council?
Sure. So doing these landscapes for so long, there's a project or there's a study that a lot of artists go through called White and White. I think a lot of common people, you hear the blue phase that artists go through after Picasso. And so white on white paintings have always kind of interested me, but because I do landscapes, the idea of not using color is kind of counterintuitive. But then I started to realize I use very thick textures. I use a palette knife and I do textures, so you can kind of see where different layers are. And this past February with the school system, I was sent to Anchorage as a special education conference for the whole state. And they had a blind deaf woman come in as a speaker. And she wasn't always blind. She lost her sight in her teens, so she had seen color and she had done stuff. But she was so inspirational to me. I mean, I can't even quite describe it. It's everyone has fears. Everyone has things holding your back. And here's a woman who's in her late 40s. She is blind and she is deaf. And she runs triathlons. She's jumped out of airplanes. She has a full-time job and used to live independently and now has her husband. But it was just so inspiring that you realize all the little things that might be holding you or me back in our lives, or say, oh, maybe later, or, oh, it'll never work. You listen to this woman speak and you realize, well, all my excuses are basically nothing. And she just inspired me so much. I came home and doing my barometer study, I painted one specifically for her. And so using my texture, it was the first time I actually individualized the texture on the painting instead of just doing it as I painted. I made the purpose of the blue sky being a different texture than the green grass, being a different texture than the trail going down the crest, different texture than the rock. So I completed the painting, and I just sent it off to her probably a month ago now. Just as something, it was a challenging thing for me as an artist, but it was also really interesting to be able to reach out to someone who may not be able to enjoy my painting otherwise. And I had a huge typed up letter to her also just to explain the different colors and textures, because knowing she had sight, she knows what blue looks like. She knows what a mountain looks like. And so I just kind of, it clicked on me saying, oh, well, this is a way to do paintings that's just slightly different than what people do now. And I kind of put together, like, I could do this as the white on white. When I use different textures, it's the same idea as when you do yellow dots and red dots in pop art. When you get really up close, you just see yellow and red dots. But if you step back, you see orange. Your mind is putting together what you're seeing. And I thought about it, and I'm like, if I do texture, I can do white on white. And I can do different texture for the sky, different texture for the mountain, different texture for grass or the river. And your mind, when you look at these paintings, you're going to see a landscape. And I kind of went off with that and I thought, well, but then what if you just touch it? What if you don't look at these paintings and you just use your fingers and tactilely touch the painting? If it's a common enough scene, again, your mind is going to put together what everything is. And to me, that's the point of art. A lot of times people use art to make your mind work through either what you have an established idea of or established beliefs in. And I'm just kind of wanting to use your mind as, let's try to look at art, not using your eyes the way you're used to and your mind connecting it the way it usually does. And so I got all excited about this project. It's, I'm going to do white on white paintings. Your mind's going to put together textures to see it, or your fingers are going to put it together with your mind to recognize that it is the Lookout or is Fort Abercrombie. But then I realized it was going to be really expensive because this medium, this gel medium, I work in acrylics, which is basically kind of liquid plastic. It's not too expensive, but then when you talk about having to do it as a big project and having to do it with such depth, that it was going to add up really quickly. And within a week of me having this project kind of finalized in my head, and I talked to a women's empowerment group I meet here on Kodiak, a business women's group, and we were just like, I'm like, what do you guys think of this? And they all thought it was a great idea. And then about 3 days later, one of them messaged me that the Kodiak Arts Council does a scholarship program to support artists and their projects and their career. And so it was within, like, the first time I kind of vocalized this project out to this group, within 2 or 3 days, they're like, hey, here's a way it might work. And so I pulled up the application, and it said, I think it says on there the average application is around $200 or $250 is the award. And I thought, well, I'm going to ask for as much as I figured out I needed, and if, even if they'll only give me part of it, that'll be something. And I sat down, and I just wrote up this application just saying, you know, why it meant so much to me, how I was planning to do it, and basically how it was coming out to cost. You know, it's $30 a jar for this medium, and I'm going to need like two or three jars for each canvas I'm putting together. And so I'm like, I need at least 400 some dollars, you know, just for the medium, let alone canvas and all that stuff extra. And I entered it in, and a week later, I got a call here, and I was so excited. I was dancing around my room. I probably sound like a dork about this, but the idea that I'm going to be able to complete this project this summer, and that when the fall comes, hopefully we'll be able to have everyone in the island come experience art in a different way, you know, using your eyes and using your fingers and being able to touch and say, okay, if I close my eyes and touch this scene, am I going to be able to figure out where on Kodiak is it? Because they're all going to be fairly common scenes. I mean, there's some great landscape here on the island. And anyone who goes out, especially over the summer when the weather's nice, you're going to recognize them. You know, Fossil Beach or The Pass or Anton Larson. Like, those are the ideas I have right now. Maybe Three Sisters. I love those mountains together. And, yeah, so that's my project. And that's what I hope everyone gets out of it.
How much was the award?
It was $600.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a great purpose to put the grant money towards, because making art is such an expensive pastime.
It really is.
It really is, yeah. Especially, like, some qualities of art materials cost more than others, like student grade versus professional, and it really is like a world of quality and prices and different mediums and different kinds of... Like, you can get powder form and wet form, and you can make it yourself, or you can buy it in a tube, and which is better, and which produces a better result, if there's a whole complicated world out there.
You know, I'm not that picky, but it just I know Walmart, I think, has, like, this gel medium, which I do use, but it's, like, this little tube, and it's very glossy. And so when I want gloss, I do use the Walmart cheap $4 or $5 a tube stuff. But if you want anything other than that one kind they carry, it's you do have to order it either from Anchorage or online, and then you're talking it's $40 for this little jar, which when it comes down to it, if that's what you need, that's what you need. There's no way to fake that sometimes. You have to have the paint.
Do you have an idea of how many paintings you want to make? Or
Five is the minimum. I'm aiming for 7.
Okay. And you'll be showing it at the end of the summer?
Yeah. The idea will be, I want to be done with them by September. And so hopefully through the month of October, that has been yet to be decided where they'll be shown, because part of it is, they have to be accessible to be touched. They're tactile paintings. So a few of the places I kind of have in mind, it's some of them will have to be set higher. So that's, if anyone knows of anywhere would like to host this, we would love to have the connection, because they're going to have to be at, you know, 2 or 3 feet off the ground where people can come up and touch them, you know, and that's the main point, is they have to be accessible to be touched. So that kind of makes it a little bit harder to find a spot for them.
Yeah, and that's such a unique idea, like touch the art, like don't not touch art.
I think we'll have to make special signs that says touch the art, because mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing everyone thinks is don't touch the art, yeah. Which a lot of art that is true, and you do want to be careful around. But the idea of this one is I'm going to make it so solid and sturdy. And it's made in a medium that can't be rubbed down. You can touch acrylics as much as you want, and as long as you don't nick it or cut it, they're not going to wear down by being touched. Oil paints eventually will wear down, or transfer to your hands and stuff if you get them too wet. But once acrylic dries, it's solid. So we'll put big signs. You know, kids can touch, have fun. Maybe hand sanitizer off to the side.
What is the scholarship called?
It's the Kodiak Arts Council Scholarship Program.
Okay. How long has it been going on?
That's an excellent question. I don't know, but many years. I worked for the organization back in 2003, and it was going on at that stage as well. So there's a committee of volunteers who review the applications and make awards, and those are folks who serve on the Arts Council Board of Directors. And everyone this year was unanimously enthusiastic about Kunant's project, and in many ways it was a perfect proposal, because it represented some growth for her as an artist, and also a new way for audiences to experience art through the tactile portion. So We were really happy to see this project as part of the program. And I'd be happy to help you find a venue for it. I'm sure there's a First Friday opportunity in October.
We have a
concert in October, and maybe it can be in the foyer. I think opportunities abound.
That's a good one.
Well, the Arts Council does so much for local artists and artists from the lower 48 that come up to Kodiak. Speaking of which, you just released your season schedule, I believe.
Yes, but we haven't released it, but I'm prepared to sort of give the first glimpse and talk about it with you. Yep, before we do the big marketing push.
Awesome. So what kind of artists will you be having?
Well, we have six performing arts events in the year ahead, and there's a number of things that we look for when we put together a season. We look for sort of a big name to launch the season, maybe a group that's had some commercial success that's going to help bring people into the auditorium for the first event. We look for artists who are maybe on the cusp of breaking out, what we call emerging artists, or artists who are doing new and innovative things within their art form. It helps if we can get them before they get really big, because then we can afford to bring them to the island. We look for artists who are really great with arts education and who are willing to do workshops or master classes or concerts for young people, student concerts. And then sort of collectively, we look to curate a season that represents a variety of different kinds of performance art. And in recent years, we've focused a little bit on more on theater. We've brought in some traveling theater troupes, both Reader's Theater and stage plays. And this year, we are going back to dance, and we're bringing in a traveling dance group. It's also a Nutcracker year, so there'll be two dance performances in this season. But we're opening in September, on Sunday, September 18th, with a group called Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, who are a big band swing group. They're going to fill the stage with lots of big brass. They sort of rose to prominence in the mid-1990s. If you remember, there was kind of a swing revival in the mid-90s with Squirrel Nut Zipper and Cherry Poppin' Daddies, and Big Bad Voodoo Daddy was part of that. And they were featured in the movie Swingers with Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau. And they were last in the state in 2011. They just played Fairbanks and Anchorage, but they were interested in doing some more regional communities this time around, so they're coming to Kodiak as well. And they're going to be great. They have a best of album. If anyone isn't familiar with their music and wants to sort of get to know them a little bit before they come to the island, I would recommend their best of album, which is called 20th Century Masters. And it has some of their biggest hits. And they're going to be a lot of fun. Then in October, we have a female a cappella quartet called Women of the World. And this is a group, they sort of classify as the emerging artists. This is a group of women who met at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. And there's one woman from Japan, one woman from Italy, a woman from Haiti, and a woman from India. And they sing world music a cappella. And they do everything from Southern gospel to Kenyan folk songs to the Italian national anthem. And they are incredible. I saw a 12-minute showcase performance by them last October with a group of other Alaskan arts organization representatives, and everyone in the audience was just stunned, and you could hear a pin drop. And they're on a 12-city tour of Alaska, so everyone from Alaska who saw them perform that day wanted to book them and bring them to their community. And they'll be here on Friday, October 7th, and they also have an opportunity to work with choir students in our middle school and high school choir program. So we're excited about that. And then our next artist in November is, she's a little bit unique. I've been working on getting her for a couple of years. I saw her perform in Los Angeles 3 years ago, and I have never stopped thinking about her performance. This is a artist named Tanya Tagak. She is a Inuit throat singer from Nunavut. She's a Canadian. And she is, I guarantee you will never see anything like Tanya Tagak. She's amazing. And her program is, she projects the 1922 silent film Nanook of the North on the back, and she's accompanied by a violinist and a percussionist, and she sings along with the movie and creates a soundtrack for the movie. And in a sense, she is reclaiming the movie Nanak of the North with an indigenous soundtrack. Her throat singing, sometimes we think of throat singing as being a male art form, and it's popular in Mongolia among men, but in Nunavut, it's a woman's art form. And elements of her work are traditional throat singing, but she's also very much a contemporary artist. And her music has a little bit of a punk, electronica, almost metal feel to it. And she's toured with Björk. She's done collaborations with symphonies. And we almost were able to bring her to the island this year in April. We were just on the cusp of finding her a year ago, but she was recruited to go to Coachella. So we lost her to Coachella, but she is motivated to come to Alaska because she's a northerner and she relates to Alaskans. And so she has agreed to come back in November, and she'll be visiting Fairbanks and Kodiak.
And you have one group called Rhythm Future Quartet?
Yes. Rhythm Future Quartet is coming in April, and they are a sort of a gypsy jazz group. They're named after a Django Reinhardt tune, and they feature a phenomenal violinist and a Finnish guitarist who is just a phenom. He's the fastest guitarist I've ever seen, and they have some great interplay between them. And they're going to be a lot of fun. They are a quartet with a violinist, a viola, and two guitars.
And we actually do have a sample of one of their songs. It's called Bushwick Stomp.
Great.
So if you just hold on for one moment, we can play some of that. That's just a sample of what you'll hear in the upcoming arts season in Kodiak. That was Rhythm Future Quartet doing Bushwick Stomp. And so we're winding down now, but Kuna, did you want to share your website?
Yeah, if anyone would like to find me on Facebook or my website, it's CUNATSPENCER.com, or you can just search that. I'll be tracking myself and just putting up things as I'm working on this project throughout the summer. So if anyone's interested, they can just follow me as I do it.
All right. And I look forward to seeing that one day on First Friday. That'd be like a really great tactile experience for people.
Hopefully.
Well, thank you all for joining us and listening in. And thank you guys for coming on to the show. You've been listening to the arts plan for the upcoming season in Kodiak and hearing from one upcoming artist who's benefiting from the Arts Council here in town. Thanks for listening.
Great. Thank you, Kayla.
Thank you.